You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and this is another edition of The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us. We've just come through another election in this past week, and I don't think it's any surprise to anybody that leading up to the election, there was a lot of, as they say, mudslinging back and forth. Much of what has become the political environment in this country is at a fever pitch, to say the least, so much so that people have either become totally disgusted with the political movement in this country, or they've just decided that one way or another they're going to dig in and do what they have to do. But nonetheless, it is at a fever pitch, and that's why I've invited my guest this week. He's best-selling author Craig Unger. His new book is Den of Spies, Reagan, Carter, and the Secret History of the Treason That Stole the White House. And what Craig Unger has done over the last over many years in six books, including this new book, is uncovering much of what takes place specifically on the Republican side of the political spectrum. In this case, we'll be focusing in on the Reagan administration. The once famous actor Ronald Reagan became governor of California and then obviously president of the United States. So Craig is focused in on that. So we've asked him to come on and share his thoughts and his expertise. Craig, nice to have you with us.
Great to be here.
I love the title, first of all, Den of Spies. I think most people, and I want to get your input on this, your insight on this, is that regardless of who's going to be president, who the nominee is, who is president, who's running for president, the fact of the matter is that there's a team. It's a team effort. They have people on the inside, on the outside, working on that candidate's behalf. And what is unbeknownst to most of the public is that there's a lot of operatives, and much goes on that the public doesn't always know about, at least not right off the bat. It seems to come to surface at some point, either during leading up to the election, or once the candidate is in office. In this particular case, you and I talked a little bit before broadcast. The Harris and Trump election certainly showed the fever pitch that's going on in this country. But even going back, so what I'm getting at is this is nothing new, right? I mean, the shenanigans or whatever you want to call it, deception, is nothing new to politics. And you've uncovered something that goes back to the 80s during the Reagan administration. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think in many ways what happened in 1980 is a prequel to what we're seeing now. And when Trump does all his machinations, a lot of it is in the open. It's overt. In 2016, you'll remember he called out to Russia, "Russia, if you can hear me, start sending me Hillary's emails." And the emails started coming. So there seemed to be an active collaboration back then, and I believe it's continuing to this day in the current election. But I went back to 1980 when things were extremely covert. This is the birth of modern conservatism. It's the birth of the Reagan era, and it's the presidential election in 1980 between Reagan and Jimmy Carter. And what I've uncovered, I worked on this on and off for over 30 years, is that there was a covert operation that sabotaged the 1980 presidential election on behalf of Ronald Reagan against Jimmy Carter.
Now, Craig, let me ask you, as I said, this is perhaps, this to many people in this country, it's like they're astonished. They can't believe what they hear. But as you said, this has been going on for a long time. But in regards to the Carter and Reagan contest, at that point, did Mr. Reagan know that his operative, what his operatives were doing? Was this his plan, or was this something presented to him, but given his final okay?
Well, his campaign manager was William Casey, who I think is one of the great master spies in American history. Exactly what Reagan knew is a little unclear. He was asked about it by reporters while he was on the tarmac getting onto a plane, and he yelled back something like, "Well, we did something the other way." That's what he said. There were also documents showing a letter to Nancy Reagan, from a former Governor John Conley, who played a small role in it. He was an operative on behalf of Bill Casey, and he made a trip to the Middle East. I think it's important to set the scene, though, because this was a time when Iran had captured 52 American hostages, and the whole campaign became about whether or not Jimmy Carter could get the hostages returned before the election, in which case he'd presumably be a hero. And if not, he would be a loser. He would be seen to be a weak president who allowed America to be humiliated. And what I discovered, and it took decades to put it all together, is the Republicans had a covert operation to make a secret deal with Iran in which they secretly armed Iran. Iran was a hostile foreign power. There was an embargo against them. And the Republicans were not even in power. Yet they sent millions of dollars of weapons to Iran, and they wanted one thing in return. They wanted Iran to prolong the incarceration of the American hostages, not to release them until after the election.
I had a feeling you were going to say that. And I'm thinking to myself, are you kidding me? Our own citizens, our own government would leave American people, citizens of this country in a foreign country, a country that probably despised us then and certainly despises us now, all for the sake of an election. Craig, it almost seems that it's something of a fantasy. It's almost like incomprehensible that people would do that, but they did. They pulled it off, right?
Absolutely. I mean, they got away with it, basically. I mean, we cobbled it together over more than 30 years, but obviously it's far, far too late to do anything about it. If you go back to those times, I mean, what makes it kind of horrific is the Iranians were chanting in the streets, "Death to America," right? And the jokes on the Republican side were all about how Ronald Reagan was going to bomb Iran to smithereens. So remember, the Republicans have always been the tough guys in American foreign policy. They were the hawks in the Cold War, the hardliners in the Cold War. They were the hawks in the Vietnam War, and they wanted to be tough on Iran. But here, I put it all together. This book was very different for me. You know, as you noted, I've done six books on the Republican Party's assault on democracy. But this one was personal because I sort of had a front row seat and I was involved in really trying to uncover it for Newsweek and all that. And I watched it be covered up again and again and again. And what I saw was kind of horrifying in that I think it's absolutely essential. America has to really know its history. We have to understand even the dark parts of our history. And this was one truth America has refused to confront.
Yeah. And as you and I talked earlier, I think nowadays, as opposed to 20, 30, 40 years ago, Americans, whether they want to accept it or not, these facts come out either through social media or, you know, network news, newspapers, news outlets. The fact of the matter is, the American people today versus many years ago have firsthand knowledge of much of what's going on. But going back to the content of Dennis Spies, okay, so the Reagan crew approaches the Iranian government and says, okay, if you can just hold off on releasing these citizens, these Americans, until after the election, which will be good for us, what did Iran get out of this, Craig?
Iran got weapons. And at the time, Iran was, the Iranian Revolution was a huge reversal on everything that was going on in the Middle East and all the geostrategic relationships. Iran had been very, very close ally of both Israel and the United States. America had installed the Shah of Iran in 1953 in a spectacular coup d'etat. And in return, we got cheap oil, the entire Western world did for a full generation from 1953 to 1979. So suddenly all the oil was not going to us. And we no longer had a big, powerful ally in the Middle East in Iran. But we didn't want – Iran was about to be attacked by Saddam Hussein, who was Iraq's dictator. And if Iraq won, then suddenly they would have all the oil in the Middle East. And they were even scarier than Iran to both Israel and the United States. So none of us wanted Iraq to conquer Iran, and that meant Iran needed to be armed, and Israel felt that way, and so did the Republicans, even though it meant arming people who are holding a hostile foreign adversary who are holding American hostages.
I think I asked this in a rather indirect way earlier. This was a plan. This didn't just unfold on a Monday morning and then put into play. This was something that had been planned for a long time. I think you mentioned that Reagan knew more than what he would ever be willing to say. But how about on the other side, Craig? How about the stakes were high then as they are today. We're talking about the president of the United States, a powerful position, most powerful person in the entire world. So there was a lot at stake. Did Jimmy Carter, did the Carter administration, did the Democrats know anything that they could have used as a counterbalance against the Republicans?
You know what? They didn't know what was going on is the sad truth. And one of the key sources on this is a man named Gary Sick, who was on Jimmy Carter's National Security Council. And he was Jimmy Carter's point man during the Iran crisis. I started investigating this after he wrote a very important op-ed piece in the New York Times in 1991. The way it all started out, in fact, was two Iranian brothers, the Hashemi brothers, approached Jimmy Carter's State Department, and they said, look, we think we're well connected in Iran. We think we can help negotiate and bring home the hostages. And the Carter administration didn't realize it, but they were really double agents working for Bill Casey, Reagan's campaign manager, in a covert operation that sabotaged the Carter administration.
It's almost like something of a that would be written for a thriller, a movie thriller. It's almost like could this possibly happen in the United States of America? But it did. It did. As I'm listening to you, but the public at large, both the public at large and the news media, the people that would have been a little bit more privy to this kind of information, they didn't know a thing either, right? I mean, at that time, the Reagan administration or the Republican Party was able to keep everything under wraps, right?
Absolutely. It really was a case of the emperor's new clothes. And in some way, on some level, it happened in plain sight. And if you remember, when Ronald Reagan was inaugurated, in January 20th, 1981, while he was still on the podium, the hostages were released. And the Onion, the satirical magazine, did a book looking back on the 20th century, and they put together a phony headline saying, Ronald Reagan inaugurated, urges America not to put two and two together. And it should have been obvious to America. How could Reagan have possibly negotiated their release? He'd only been president for 3 minutes. It was impossible. So something had to be going on behind the scenes. And it really is a thriller of a spy story. I think Bill Casey is an extraordinary character. I describe him as one of America's great spies. He's sort of a cross between James Bond and Mr. Magoo. He mumbled when he talked. That was his nickname, Mumbles. He spilled food all over his shirt when he ate. He wanted to be Secretary of State under Reagan, and Nancy Reagan said, "No way, we're going to let this slob preside at state dinners." But he was a dazzlingly brilliant spy.
Yeah.
And I put together how he assembled a secret network that was, you know, just imagine, with one hand you're running a winning presidential campaign, you're in the media spotlight 24/7, and then secretly you're dashing all over the world selling arms to Iran. That's what Bill Casey was doing.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. It really is. I just want to take a quick pause to remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us this week. If you're just joining us, my guest this week is best-selling author Craig Unger. His new book is Den of Spies, Reagan, Carter, and the Secret History of the Treason That Stole the White House back in the 80s. We talked so much about what recently happened between the Trump and the Harris campaign and the turmoil leading up to this most recent election. But Craig has for many years in all six of his books uncovered much of what goes on behind closed doors, specifically with the Republican Party. Craig, correct me if I'm wrong. Casey became the head of the CIA, did he not?
Absolutely. And, you know, he had been a spectacular spy in World War II with the Office of Strategic Services, which was the precursor of the CIA. And he oversaw our intelligence operations in Europe against the Nazis and did a brilliant, brilliant job. Sadly, he started using those tactics against the Democrats. And in 1980, he was still a private citizen. He didn't join the CIA until Reagan became president, and he went in as top dog, of course.
Right, right. But here's the other thing. So let me ask you, knowing you know what you've researched and what you found out, that he had this illustrious career going back to World War II. So that did that not shield him from any criticism from anybody throwing mud at him, thinking, well, this guy's really a hero? I mean, Bill Casey, you know, bow down to Bill Casey. So no one, I guess what I'm saying is, nobody would have reason to question him, right?
Well, they started to during the Iran-Contra investigation when Reagan was president. Mm-hmm. And those, of course, were the hearings in which Oliver North was the main attraction. But when you thought about it, Oliver North could not have done what he did in the Iran-Contra investigation without Casey's approval. And a lot of the Iran-Contra scandal, of course, involved secret and illegal arms sales to Iran. And most people thought that began in 1984. What I discovered is that it really started much earlier, and that the October surprise of 1980 was really the origin story of the Iran-Contra scandal. That is, this is when a secret channel selling illegal weapons to Iran began.
Craig, I guess the other thing that I think would certainly startle most readers, most people, is they think of, to this day, I think if you walk through the Hall of Presidential Fame, in the eyes of many Americans, regardless of where you sit on the political spectrum, Ronald Reagan is still a fairly well-respected and revered president. With all of this that took place, and the years now that have passed, I mean, he's obviously gone. But how do these people maintain these long-standing careers, and then even after they're out of office, and even after they pass on, the people still hold them in reverence, knowing all the things that went on? I mean, I don't understand. Are Americans just devoid of wanting to really know the truth, or they just kind of block that out?
Well, absolutely. I think this is really a huge problem, that is, Americans really don't want to confront the ugly parts of their past. They're in denial. And, you know, I think it's something we have to come to terms with our history, however dark it may be. If you go to Germany, and as a child, my father took me to the Holocaust camps in Dachau, you see that Germany actually accepts blame for the atrocities the Nazis committed. They say, we did these horrible things, and the monuments are to the victims. One of the presidents of Germany says, to truly love Germany, you can only love it with a broken heart. And I think we have to try to do that in America. We deny our history. We still have memorials to Robert E. Lee, who killed hundreds of thousands of Americans. The Confederate flag flies at Trump rallies. That really is akin to Nazis flying the swastika. There really is a parallel there. And people don't want to believe this. These are the dark, ugly truths that get buried. And I think that's a chronic problem, and we have to fully confront them if we're to stop this from continuing.
Craig, I've got to wonder then, with that said, knowing, you know, this information comes out, you've put it between the pages of a book now, it's there for people to read. The information is there. It's been verified. And I'm just wondering that, as you said, so many don't want to accept the truth. But we've also seen, and I think you would agree with this, you know, at one time when I grew up, when I was a kid, it was Republican and Democrat, period. There's the independents, but there's so many other parties now. There's so many splinter groups. So when these acts take place, when the information is finally out there, when this is presented to the public, those who do listen, those who do want to know the truth, what I'm getting at is it seems like they go their own way now. Oh, look, you know, I can't believe the Republicans. I can't believe the Democrats. So let's form our own little group and see if we can make some impact here. I see that as detrimental to America in the long term. Is that a little too too extreme?
No, not at all. Absolutely. It's why I like people like you. Because the national conversation is now atomized into millions of little silos on Twitter and or X, as it's called now, and other social media outlets. When I grew up, Walter Cronkite had his nightly broadcast. He spoke to 30 million people who are Republican and Democrat, and there was a shared set of facts. Today, everything is marginalized and is siloed and atomized into millions of different little threads and silos on Twitter and on other social media. And people don't share the same set of facts. And it's easy for people to be in denial. Back in the old days, as I try to show, it was done covertly. But even today, when Donald Trump speaks openly and he says to Russia, as he did in 2016, Russia, if you hear me, release Hillary's emails. Well, that's really, a private citizen who's not in the government is not allowed to hijack American foreign policy. And that's precisely what I show happened in 1980. And I think Donald Trump has been doing it again in as he did in 2016. He's been doing it in this election. Bob Woodward showed he had I believe it was 7 contacts with Vladimir Putin. They're not supposed to be running foreign policy when you're not in the government. One
right.
President at a time, and it should be country over party, not the reverse.
Right. We've got a few moments left, I have to ask you this, and I want to get your sense on all of this. With that said, when this information, when Dennis spies, people pick up the book, which I hope they will read the book. People get this information. I've got to believe that what it tells other potential candidates, other people interested in perhaps running for office, that hey, you know what? These guys pulled off some shenanigans. Why couldn't we? Why couldn't I? So what I'm saying is, does it taint the lot? Does it taint the pool of possible candidates who may run down, who may run in a future campaign? So that to the point where it's like, oh, anything goes today in this country. So you don't have to be credible as long as you can hide it from the public. That dark side that he or she has can be hidden long enough so that we get into office. Are we creating a monster?
Yes, and I think it's already happened. I think the Democrats really have to fight back. In this election, it's too early to uncover everything about the behind-the-scenes shenanigans that went on, as I did in the 1980 presidential election. But we already know that Trump's pal, Elon Musk, is very close to Putin. Trump was in touch with Putin again during this election. And Musk's social media platform, now called X, formerly Twitter, put through more than two billion page views of pro-Trump propaganda during this election. That's 10 page views for every American voter. That's just extraordinary. So it's still going on, and we have to stop it. And the reason I think it's important to bring the past to light is because if we don't confront it, if we don't forget it, we are doomed to repeat it again and again.
Well, there's the warning. Hopefully that people will take heed of that, Craig. The book is widely available. Dennis Spies recently released. It's a great read. Regardless of what side of the political spectrum you're on, it's educational and it's informative more than anything else. But Craig, if people want to pose questions to you directly, reach out to you directly, can they do that? How might they do that?
Yes, you know, it may be possible to reach me on Twitter, where my handle is at Craig Unger. And I also have a website called CraigUnger.com.
Great. Again, the book is Dennis Spies. My guest has been best-selling author Craig Unger. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. We certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you.